Hey everybody, Shane Presley here with Rock Paper Podcast. I want to tell you about my friends over at Gaslight. Located on the corner of Kings Highway and Shaw Boulevard, right over there on the hill in St. Louis, Missouri. Go on over to GaslightSTL.com and take a look around. You can book a tour to come check out the facilities. And, of course, you can see a full listing of all upcoming dates with various bands. Of course, you can see Bad Cover Band Sam there on September 10th, Saturday. They're going to be doing a live in-studio session, and you can come be a part of it. You can sit inside a bar-type setting and listen to one of your favorite bands record, and then that audio from the studio is then pumped into the bar side. So you can watch through the glass window and listen as they record and be involved in it. And of course, you get some drinks, Cha-Cha Chow's next door, and get some tacos. It's a great day. So check them out online, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, GaslightSTL.com.
Podcast is kind of like it's like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
Hey, this is not Brian.
This is not Doug. We are Odds Lane.
And you're listening to the Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.
What it's like to want more and more.
Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from St. Louis, Missouri, hanging out with the guys of Odds Lane. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you. Thanks,
Shane. Wait, is this the part where we're supposed to clam up and not talk?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
We've been talking nonstop for an hour. Now's the time to...
That's your cue, guys.
All right. Get quiet, everybody. Let's make this really uncomfortable for people to listen to.
Right. Yeah. It's funny how many of those, how sad that is, how true that is, you know, because, like, I don't know. It's funny. You put a microphone in front of people and they immediately want to... You know, I'm like, this is for radio, guys. We have to talk, you know. It's like...
Well, you know, it's like the old guitar player joke or whatever musician joke.
Yeah.
You know? How do you get a guitar player to turn down? Well, you put a chart in front of them.
Yeah.
You know, so... Right. You know, so, you know, how do you get somebody to shut up? Put a mic in front of them.
Yeah,
they right. Won't, so...
But, I'm super excited about this, to meet up with you guys. This is our first time officially meeting. And
yeah.
I've kind of known of the group for a long time now, but
How long have we been like going back and forth? Like,
yes,
yeah, hey, man, we should probably do that at some point.
Yeah, it's kind of been a while in the making, but you know, I feel like I don't know. And somebody, another podcaster, told me something about like, you know, it's always kind of it always happens at the right time. I mean, like you kind of. You're sending invites out or whatever, and you're kind of just getting like a discouraged or something that happened, and then all of a sudden, like it does happen, and it happens. You know, like today we've got a new record to talk about. We got
exactly.
A lot going on, so it's obviously more appropriate to talk now than 6 months ago or something. Like
yeah,
that.
And we're like, hey, in 6 months, right. We'll really have stuff to talk about.
Sure,
so let's do that.
Yeah, but I'm like I said, it's so I always kind of I don't beat myself up if it doesn't happen right away or whatever. I just kind of let it ride itself out, and like I said, it all works its way out. So
yeah, it all was kind of sudden for me.
Yeah,
because I just found out about it about 45 minutes.
Oh yeah,
ago.
I don't. I try not to tell him things because
right.
You know it's fun for me to let him just kind of find out and be like, what? Oh we're doing. Oh, okay. So that's it's my secret little dirty.
It's more fun when I don't know.
Entertainment to just surprise him and you know. Hey, by the way, we're doing this gig next week. Oh, we are. Okay.
Yeah.
I've only known about it for 8 months, but you know,
yeah.
I don't want to tell him about it.
Right.
What's the fun in that?
Well, I guess before we get going too far into this thing, it'd probably be good that you guys introduce yourselves and so those know your. Your voice is at home. They're listening.
Right on.
Well, I'm not Doug Burkett. I do not play bass, sing, or play guitar with Odds Lane.
I am not Brian Zeeley. That's the other guy over there who doesn't play guitar. He, I don't know, he hits stuff.
Yeah.
So, no, I'm Doug. This is Doug's voice for those of you just tuning in. And Brian, you say hi as Brian.
I'm still not Doug. I am Brian. Thanks for rolling with that, Doug.
Yeah.
No problem. I'm here. I'm here to support.
Yeah, that's what we're all about. Support. But like I said, you guys got this new record coming or is out now.
Is out.
And
yeah.
And we got a new video and all this fun stuff. But I want to go over some you know, a little backstory first. I always like to kind of treat these like a good introduction of sorts, you know, and for anybody that is new to hearing you guys, and then even though I'm sure most of it's going to be friends and family that listen, but...
Not mine.
Well, yeah. Yeah. And maybe my mom.
Right.
I'm pretty sure, hi, Mom. She's listening.
Yeah.
That could be.
My friends and family don't care for me.
What are friends?
Yeah.
My friend, I have a friend, he's here.
Yeah, we're all here.
That's yeah.
He's right there. He's not going to listen. He'll listen to this a little bit.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah. Right. He's listening tonight because we're here.
I'm hearing it first, Tate.
Yeah. Well, it depends on how much that maker's mark, I guess, huh?
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, what else are you going to do?
I mean, that coffee. That's what I'm
saying.
Coffee.
Yeah.
Coffee. Yeah. We don't touch that stuff.
Right.
Well, the history would be, obviously, you can tell Doug and I just met recently.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was it two, 3 days ago?
2-3 days ago or 1987, one of the two.
Was it 87? I thought it was 88. Was it 87?
Maybe it was 88.
I thought it was 88. I could be wrong.
No, it was 87.
Was that the first drum recital?
Yeah. Okay. We met in 1987, where we took drum lessons.
Oh yeah, that was my Whitesnake. That was the Whitesnake year.
Yeah.
The next year was the Deja Vu year.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. That makes sense to no one.
Yeah, nobody gets that, but...
We took last... He was a drummer.
My mom got that. She's, like, totally into it. She knows what's going on.
Mom's cracking up.
Yeah.
We took drum lessons from the same drum teacher and met at drum recitals. And later, when he decided that he was too cool to play the drums and wanted to sing, we formed our band together. He remembered me from...
Yeah. Well, I should say, too, that... Yeah, that's all true, but my Uncle John, was the band teacher at his middle school, at Brian's middle school, for those of you not watching on television. So he hooked...
Not Doug Smith.
Uncle John hooked me up with the drum teacher, who happened to be the drum teacher at the middle school that Brian was going to, who's already taken lessons. So that's how we kind of met through the lessons, and that was... Afterwards, when I had seen the Bon Jovi concert and decided that, you know, Tico's pretty cool, but John, well, all those girls, they like that John guy.
Right.
Anyway, when I decided that, I was like, well, crap, now I need a drummer because I'm not playing drums anymore. And I remembered, I was like, oh, yeah, that one guy, the other really good drummer, because I thought I was really good. Of course, you know, you're in middle school, you think you're good. We called it junior high back then.
Yeah.
For those of you that don't,
you were the fourth best.
I was the fourth best. It's possible.
Maybe.
I don't know. I had the biggest drum set. That's all that.
That is true.
That's all that mattered.
You had
me.
A lot of drums.
I had a lot of drums.
And that's
and that's what's important. But anyway, so I was like, oh crap! I wonder about that guy. I should ask Uncle John. And he got me his phone number, and I called him up, and I don't even know. Like what I said when I called you up, I'm sure I was some cocky little, you know, hey man, I got a really cool band, you should come and join it,
because
right. I'm cool and I got a big drum set you could come and play on.
I would have no idea what you said. It was pretty cool, so we got together.
Yeah.
And I knew a keyboard player who knew how to play Separate Ways, so we got together for months and played Separate Ways.
Yep.
That's it.
Yeah, it was the three of us, and then did Donnie come in right away, or was that later on?
Later on, we got a bunch of people. It's ancient history. Yeah. And then we recorded this album that came out.
Flash forward 25 years or whatever it is, and then we recorded this album. Great. Thanks, podcast is over. All right, great. Love you guys.
It's a long history to start getting into members of Excalibur in 1987.
Yeah.
88.
So, that was the first band?
Yeah, so that was...
that was the first band. We never played under that name, but that was a working...
We never even played, really, other than the basement.
No, we did actually. No, we didn't. You're right.
Yeah, we never played. So it was later on that my old band, like at this point where, you know, you're like, whatever, 13 or 14,
yeah.
The old band's getting together where I played drums. And we were getting together, and then, but, well, I'm not playing drums anymore, guys, but I got this drummer, so I brought him over, and we played, we had like one rehearsal, and then the bass player immediately quit, and I think the keyboard player stuck it out for maybe two practices, and then after that it was like, okay, well, the guitar player's still here, and I guess I can't play guitar now, I have to play bass, because the bass player and the keyboard player are gone. So I switched over to bass, and that was the first actual band.
Yeah, so it was a trio where he played bass, which is his thing.
Yeah,
I know he doesn't believe it now, but it's his primary instrument.
Right.
And then we recorded this album.
That's crazy that you guys,
we've known each other.
Sticking around this long.
A long time.
I went to see Joe Walsh at... Hollywood Casino Amphitheater or whatever you want to call it this week.
It's Riverport.
Yeah, Riverport. Yeah. And he brought, he had like an 11 piece band, I think, like four background singers, two drummers, bass, guitar, had a synth player and a keyboard player. Anyway, just great band. But I think his guitar player and the drummer have been with him like since the 70s or something like that. So he's, you know, it's just cool to see these guys that, like, you know, they find players that they like playing with, and they stick together for
Yeah, it's one of those things, man. I mean, if you can find somebody that you actually like playing with and you don't hate them all the time,
right.
You know, I mean, it's like, well, then that you have to do that. You know, there's no if you can. I mean, stuff happens, and you know, bands go in and out. And I mean, we haven't always played together. I mean, that was that first, you know, official band that actually recorded and played out was, you know, like what, 75 bands ago or something.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so
we've played together and not played together.
Right.
Yeah.
Also, what were some of those other early band names, like Excalibur, that you guys remember?
The first one was the Somethings.
Somethings.
Yeah, and the funny thing about that was the way that we printed it on the album cover. I mean, well, the cassette cover. Let's be honest. You know, people thought they couldn't read it, so they kept calling us the Somi Things.
Yeah.
So that was terrible. Yeah. But anyway, but yeah, that was the one. What were some of the other ones?
Some of the other bands we were in together.
Yeah.
So early. Let's see. Okay. The Somethings, then Otherwise.
Yeah, probably Otherwise was the
Tumbleweed best. Sandwich, Banana Fish, Mouth Brooder.
Oh, I forgot about the Banana Fish.
The Hepcats with a Z.
With a Z.
Hepcats. Those were all kind of together, I think, and that's when I quit and joined Bozo Rooster.
Yeah.
Different band without him. Right. But a lot of good bands.
It's the 90s by now. Yeah. By the time Bozo Rooster comes up.
Bozo Rooster.
Yeah. That was the first one where we actually like really started playing in bars. And was that before I joined Short Fuse? Or was that during that time? I don't know. There was a certain period where, like, you know, you get out of high school and then all of a sudden we're playing in bars. And it's like, oh, wow. This is like real.
Yeah.
We're playing for real. This isn't the Casey Hall in Collinsville.
Yeah, because you were in Short Fuse when I was in Technicolor Yawn.
Yeah.
And then you joined Technicolor Yawn.
I joined Technicolor Yawn.
And I got kicked out of Technicolor
Yawn. Yeah, and then we kicked you out. And then
this is
that band.
Purposely confusing to your audience. Yeah. It's just fun to hear people randomly rattle off band names.
How do you land on Odds Lane then? Where does that come from then?
All right, so after... So Technicolor... That must have been, like, what, 96?
Yeah, early 90. Yeah.
Mid-90s.
94, 95.
Yeah. And then...
We'll fast forward a couple bands together. We ended up playing with Mike Zito.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In band Zito. We played with him for a long time. And then after that...
I mean, that was really like college for... I mean, we went to college together, too. But Zito was college.
Yeah.
I mean, that was, you know, like... As many crazy stories, of all the crazy stories that we have, most of them come from that period.
Sure.
You know, after that, it's pretty much like, well, we played the show and we maybe had too much to drink. But nothing really happened. It was just, you know, but those stories are like, oh, and then we lost Mike. Oh, and then that's when the hooker came. And, you know, all these, you know, crazy, that was like, you know, some crazy stuff.
Yeah.
So
we did that, and that's where we also learned to play. We played a lot of times 8 shows a week. That sounds like a lie when you say it, but it's true. We played every day of the week and twice on Sunday a lot of times, or twice on a Saturday. We did that for years with him. And then when that ended, generally, we had another band that was together that didn't make it. And then we went off and did other stuff a little while. I joined a band called Nadine. It was of some moderate, another awesome band, one of the best bands I've ever been in.
Yeah,
Doug did some stuff. And then we got back together in
Nadine, by the way, was not to undersell it, was on Pete Yorn's label.
Yeah.
They did a bunch of touring, you know, playing out on the West Coast with Pete.
Yeah, fantastic band.
Yeah, good band. Good
Just
band.
Absolutely.
So anyway, he's doing that. I, at that time, when that the band we were in after Zito kind of broke up, he went off, did that stuff. I was married at the time, had a kid, and we ended up moving like to Potosi of all places. And so he's off doing that. I'm down in the boondocks, you know. Down, we just kind of, I mean, we still kind of kept in touch, but you know, this is also pre-texting and you know pre-Facebook, so you know it was a little bit harder to really stay in touch. So it wasn't until I moved back to St. Louis, and then Nadine was kind of over, that we started trying to play. I mean, was it hip check? Was that the first thing?
That was before Nadine. I'm trying to gloss over.
Yeah.
There's 48 bands.
Yeah, there's so many.
The main point, Nadine ended.
Yeah. I'm back in St. Louis.
He's back in St. Louis, and then we got back together as the Bears. This is getting to your question. It really is a roundabout way. We're getting there.
Stay with us, people. Yeah. We promise.
We got together a new project called Breakers. Original project, and that name, were you asking about was it the name specifically, Odds Lane, or how the band came together?
Yeah, well, I think, well, how we get to today. How we
they're both, and that's how we got there. We had a band called The Breakers.
And that was, really good that was about, I mean, that was like, what, 03, 04?
04.
04.
And 05.
04 and 05. And so that kind of brought us back together, and then without boring people and going through all of the stuff that happened with that. So that kind of ended, but I had kept the name, and I demoed a bunch of stuff, and you know, and that actually, I guess one interesting thing about the Breakers, though, one of the cool things we did was we recorded a little bit, and we got invited to go down to Sun Studio and recorded down in Memphis.
Oh, nice.
Which was fun. Which is, if you want to talk about that later. But anyway, so after that, the band kind of broke up, but I kind of sort of kept the name because I'm a jerk like that. And I put together some demos, and I was just going to like, oh, I'm just going to do a solo thing. And then I kind of realized as I was getting through the demos, yeah, this drum machine is terrible. This is not going to work. I need Brian on this. So I called him and was like, would you please play on this? I know things are kind of weird or whatever with it, but could, and so we did that, and he ended up kind of playing on those tracks, and then that became, you know, an album, and then that sort of started kind of things up again, where we're like, okay, well, let's, you know, and at that time, then I was like, well, I'm just going to play guitar now and sing, so we need to get some other people in the band, so we got a couple other people started playing some shows with that material, and you know, it kind of percolated a little bit. And then eventually what happened to get to Odds Lane, and basically Odds Lane is the Breakers, just kind of version 2.5 or whatever.
Yeah.
There was another band in Denmark called the Breakers. And I'd known about them when I trademarked the name and like, you know, 04 or 05, whenever I did it. But that was like, that's MySpace days.
Right.
You know, and I'm like, oh, there's some band in Denmark. Ah, that'll never be a big deal. So, you know, I trademarked the name. And then as we were kind of thinking about maybe recording again and things were still going on, I get an email from those guys. Well, actually, not from those guys, from their new American label that they were on, which was Stevie Van Zandt. Is his label, and I get an email from like the not Stevie, but the label guy,
sure.
And it's like, hey, we got this new band we just signed called The Breakers. So I'm like, oh, I know those guys from Denmark. And they're like, yeah. We need your name. You know, how much? You know, we want to buy it. And so we negotiated over that. So then they bought that name, and then they were like, well, crap. Now we need a new name. What are we gonna do? So, I don't know if you want to explain where Odds Lane come. Odds Lane.
I'm sorry, I fell asleep there for telling that story.
Very technical. I'm sure everyone's taking notes.
If anybody's still listening, the Breakers is an interesting name. It sounds like a surf band kind of thing, and it was meant to sound like that. But it's a reference to a Stephen King book series called The Dark Tower, which we really share in common. We love. And after he sold that name out from under me for cash,
did I mention I'm a jerk?
We wanted to find a name that was also related to that series. So I have like an encyclopedia of things from those books, and we just spent days just going through other phrases and words from that book series that would sound cool as a band name, and all the ones that sounded cool were already other band names. So we ended up with Odds Lane, which is also a reference to that. And that's how that band name came about.
Yeah.
And that movie will be coming out in February. We're very excited. Stephen King, Dark Tower movie. Go see it in February. I'm sure it'll be good.
Yes.
And maybe they'll name our band accidentally.
Hey, they could. That could.
Yeah,
it could be.
Yeah, it could be. We could get.
I gotta get on this. I gotta find somebody. Whoever's listening, I'm sure the.
I mean, you gotta get on selling this name to somebody else.
I'm saying, I'm sure Stephen King is listening. So
right.
Stephen King,
yeah, big
give
fan.
Give me a call. We'll work something out.
Right. So you guys, has Auslan's always been a two-piece then, or are you guys?
Technically, yes.
Yeah, technically. I mean, we record. I mean, when we did the album previous to this, it was really just the two of us.
It was the two of us, but we farmed out. We had our friend Joe Lidke, who is in our band, The Breakers, and he also, what's his podcast called?
What's Indie Music Plus is the site and everything.
Yeah, Indie Music Plus. He does a big, he just supports independent music. He moved to Rochester, New York, and he does a big thing. We sent him the tracks, and he did keyboards and some background vocals on that. And we had our friend Pat Hayden play some guitar solos on that last record. But it was mostly just the two of us.
Right.
This record is just the two of us.
Yeah, just us.
And then well, I was watching the video for Last Night on Cherokee, which is available now. And I was watching that, and like, and it shows a lot of studio stuff with you guys, and like, and it looked like you're playing the bass parts too.
I'm playing the bass and the guitar. So, but I put on a different shirt for each one of those. So the Doug without the denim is playing guitar. The Doug with the denim is the bass player.
Yeah.
So if you don't like the bass parts, blame the denim guy. If you don't like the guitar parts, you know, blame the other guy.
We didn't actually record all the stuff at the exact same time.
Right.
We did bass and drums together. And then
we really wanted to, like, with the last one, we did a lot of tracking. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we played together in the studio, but then I replaced everything. Like, the drum track stayed, but I replaced the guitar, the bass, and did a lot of overdubbing and stuff. And when we were kind of coming with this new album, we really wanted to kind of throw back a little bit to, like, what we did in the Zito days. We really kind of got interested. Really what happened was is we got back together with Mike. Like, we had lost track with him for years, and we kind of did a reunion show with him and kind of got back, you know, playing some of the old stuff off that original Blue Room album that you brought a copy of. And we just kind of got interested in that sound again. And, like, you know, we didn't want to just, like, oh, we're just going to make Blue Room without Mike. But, like, what could we do that kind of is a little bit more like that, a little bit more live kind of sound? So
is that a gramophone?
At the gramophone?
Was that show?
Were you out there for that one?
I don't know if I made that one. I know I've seen Mike.
The reunion, the Blue Room reunion show, is at BB's.
BB's?
Yeah, we did that at BB's. Odds Lane play open for Mike at the gramophone.
Yeah.
I don't know if you were out there for that. That was.
Yeah, I've seen Mike a bunch of times.
Yeah.
And I was there, and I've seen him with Royal Southern Brotherhood and stuff a bunch of times too, at gramophone and old rock house and things. So
yeah,
but I was just trying to, because I know I remember seeing Odds Lane opened up or for that show or something, one of the gramophone, I believe.
Yeah, I did an acoustic set for the Southern Brotherhood, Royal Southern Brotherhood at the gramophone, and then we as a band played when Mike was in at the gramophone. But the reunion thing that we did like the whole Blue Room album. It was at BB's, and that was like the first time we'd really like talked to Mike or like reconnected with him at all in forever. And then we just kind of like started getting back into that, and every time he's in town, you know, we'll end up sitting in on a song or two. And it just kind of became a thing where it was like, you know what, I think we want to change directions a little bit. Not that it's completely different, but a lot of the old stuff was more kind of indie rock kind of stuff, and this is definitely more of a like a blues rock, you know, more rootsy kind of stuff. And the us just recording live bass and drums, and then just throwing a guitar track on top of it, you know, was trying to kind of keep with that more live kind of blues feel to what we normally do, but mixing that, you know, kind of in on top of it.
Right. You guys, I mean, is blues been, you know, kind of run through a lot of the history of your, as a musician? I mean, you guys grew up on that stuff, or is this something you guys acquired a taste for that kind of?
We were talking about this earlier. It's interesting. We were talking about authenticity. We were having a conversation when you play.
Perfect lead into what we're talking about.
Yeah, it's amazing that you did that.
Excellent. You have read our mind.
Some could view it as a com- is a little fake to make a complete change from going to be... We were kind of in a wanting to be Radiohead mode.
Right.
And then to say, you know, we're going to be kind of like...
I'm just going to be a blues band.
We'll be a blues band now. Right. That might seem kind of inauthentic. But it's not, because the amount of time in my life, in his, for him too, I've spent so many years cumulatively playing in a blues band and eating and breathing that, or at the same time playing in a modern rock, oh, you want to sound like Matchbox 20? I've played in that band for 10 years. I've played in him too. I've played in a James Brown funk band for 10 years of my life.
I have a name. It's Doug.
Because your name is not Brian.
My name is
not
Brian.
Not Brian has done it. Also, Brian plays that, and not Brian has also done that.
Yeah.
Anyway, you can make those changes. It's not. It's not like you're changing your style. You're accessing different things.
Definitely.
Yeah. And I mean, and if you think about it too, I mean, well, we went to you know, college together and studied jazz, and you know, blues is the root of everything anyway, you know,
sure,
as far as American music is concerned. So, I mean, even though that, you know, we went to school and studied jazz, or we played in rock bands, or, mm-hmm, you know, played in pop bands or whatever, it doesn't matter. It all traces back to blues.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like it's a foreign thing. All of a sudden we're doing 20th century improvisational, you know, avant-garde music,
right,
which, you know, okay, maybe that's a little bit of a stretch for us. We haven't done that. But, you know, we've done all this other music that, you know, it's all blues based,
sure,
anyway.
And it's not that, it sounds like you anyway, and it's nothing different than any other good band would say. Any other good band would say the same thing. Everybody we know could change directions on a dime. The guys in why can't I think of the name of anybody's band?
Not Brian's band.
The Gorge. If the Gorge turned around tomorrow, and when the Gorge is a local awesome metal band, progressive metal band, they could wake up tomorrow and say, we're going to do fusion, jazz fusion, and it would be awesome. It's not a different idea that. But that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
So
I think anybody that's like actually really studied their craft in any way, you know, can try and can change direction and do something different. You know, that's not a big deal. I think the biggest thing is to try and figure out what you want to do, who you are. And sometimes, like, you know, with this album, you know, maybe this is us right now.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, maybe it won't be on the next album. I think it will be. I think we spent a lot of time on this one really trying to think about, we want to do something different. I mean, we're sitting in this room that we did a lot of rehearsals, just me and Brian, and I kind of demoed up a lot of stuff, and we spent a lot of time, more time on this album than we've ever done anything ever before, of like, all right, let's just play the groove. Let's see where this goes. And, you know, an hour later, we're still doing the same song.
Yeah.
And like, okay, well, maybe I'll try and shuffle it a little bit. Nah, I'm not going to shuffle it. Oh, let's do this. Maybe I'll do that. You know, and we spent a lot of time just working on the feels of the music and trying to figure out, what do we want to do right now? You know, like, what's the thing that we want to do? And I think that's where this album is, especially, you know, kind of, if you want to use that term, authentic. You know, this is authentically what we're doing right now.
Definitely.
You know, it's what we're interested in, and you know, we really tried to, you know, pick out what we were, you know, like who you are. You know, you're a little kid, you know, in high school, and you're trying to figure out who you are.
Sure.
We spent a lot of time on this album trying to figure out, who are we? What do we want to, what do we really want to do? You know, what do we sound like?
I like that people, you know, a band can do that, though. They can take, you know, turns and, you know, have different sounding records where, you know, you don't want everything sounding the exact same and stuff. But the one guy I like to bring up, and I think has done a remarkable job at it and still always been authentic with it all, is John Mayer. Like, the guy has put out a pop record, put out blues record, put out an Americana record, put, you know, he's like, every record he puts out is constantly changing and evolving, and his fan base has stayed there with him the whole time. You know, it's like, he's never, people never just ditched him because he's, you know, oh, he's put out a blues record now. people are still coming out. You know, he's still selling out arenas. He went on tour with the Dead this year and stuff. And like,
yeah, exactly.
I just think it's you know, regardless of how you feel about it, but I think it's great that a guy is able at his level mm-hmm. is able to take and totally flip his music from record to record and put out something completely different.
I don't like it.
Yeah,
I think when you get to that level, you owe it to yeah. the fans
right.
to do exactly the same just, thing.
Right. You just
every
have to
time.
Do, why Georgia?
Yeah.
Georgia, why did you do that? Georgia, what's wrong with you? Georgia, I don't care. Just yeah. over and over and over and over again. That's you yeah. know, that's your moneymaker.
Right.
What's wrong with that guy?
I don't know.
Yeah.
See, I'm rethinking what we're doing.
Why is he? Why
oh,
is
no
he
one ever liked anything we did. So it's a lot easier when nobody cares.
Yeah, there you go.
Sure.
Then we can be all.
Oh, they changed their sound. Oh, I didn't yeah. know what it sounded like before. Yeah.
They had a sound before. I didn't know that.
I've been told that the new album it sounds just like you guys, but with a flatted fifth.
Nah.
That's a music joke.
Music yeah. joke.
Yeah. Not a good one either.
The three music nerds that are listening right now. Joe might have listened this far.
Hi, Joe.
Joe, you're laughing. You got that.
Stop tweeting.
Stop tweeting and
stop
listen to
stop cluttering up my Twitter feed.
Listen to our podcast, Joe.
Yeah, Joe.
Joe. Hey, Joe.
So the new record, we were kind of getting towards.
yeah.
Last Night on Cherokee is available now. But I was gave me links to check it out, and I was listening on the way over and after at work and stuff, and getting to take in some of this, and I was really digging it. I liked "Bottom of the Sea." That was one that really stuck out to me. I had just kind of a funky rock kind of groove you had going on in there. Just I don't know, caught my attention.
Well, thank you.
Yeah,
I happen to love that song,
yeah.
and it got stuck kind of near the end of the record.
Yeah.
For yeah, whatever reason, it's kind of strange because it doesn't have much of a chorus. It's kind of a talking heads kind of jam, but
sure.
but without a the little great chorus. It's like, I like that song a lot.
Yeah. No, I like everything off this album.
Not a fan of a lot of songs.
Not a fan. These guys are not good. No, we had a lot of debate about like where to put songs,
sure.
you know, on the album and stuff. But you know, I think we got the order close enough. But who knows? We could be absolutely completely wrong. But that is one of my favorite ones to play live, though.
Yeah,
I like that one a lot.
Well, we're still operating under this archaic mindset that somebody's listening to a record.
Yeah.
What track is it? No, who cares? Yeah. Nobody's listening to an entire record. They're downloading a track.
Yeah,
right?
Song or two songs.
And I mean, and that's like it's usually typically the case. Like in today's you know, album sales and stuff. Obviously, you can look at you know, people are buying singles and stuff. People, you know, we're
yeah, exactly.
And it's like you know, you get on iTunes and they pick the ones they like and or something like that. But I've talked about the story a couple times, but my friend. Patrick Sweeney, he's a super talented blues rock singer out of Nashville now, originally from Akron, Ohio area. But he is, you know, one of my favorites. But he's got a song called "Them Shoes" that got picked up on like Black Keys Pandora radio because
mm-hmm.
Dan Auerbach produced his record, and so like it gets lumped in with that. So like that one single song, "Them Shoes," like outsells his entire catalog. That everybody buys that one song because that's what they heard on Pandora,
right. yeah,
and
yeah.
then. But I mean, like, you know, it is bringing people to the shows though.
It's, yeah.
you know, that's good. You got to get them to the shows. It's interesting. Right. I teach drums. I teach a lot of kids, and I'm always amazed when they want to learn a song. I send them home and I say, "Find a song you like that you want to learn," and they come in with a song. And after we learn the song, I say, "What else do you want to do?" And they can't think of another song. And I'm just constantly surprised that it doesn't occur to you to check out anything
yeah.
else by the band
yeah.
whose song you bought.
I mean, you're
on.
You're younger than us, but I mean, I think we're still kind of close enough in age that, you know,
sure,
you probably remember, you know, being a kid and like an album coming out by your favorite artist, and you're like, I'm not going to download the song.
Yeah.
I'm getting the album, and I want to learn. I want to listen to everything off that album, you know. And I know, and you might have, you know, more favorites than others, but I remember buying the whole thing. Like, it was not a question of, well, I'm just going to get the single cassette, because no, you just buy the album, and then if you don't like some songs, you just fast forward. You don't listen to those.
I think, I don't know where, you know, obviously where the change happened, but I do feel like, I think it was a lot of just radio's fault, where like, and record labels kind of like just, they were putting out a lot of music that really wasn't worth buying the whole record anyway.
Right,
you had artists that were putting out singles and stuff. So
yeah, and then the rest was just filler.
Yeah.
And nobody really thought about, we're going to do a whole album, and how does the album flow and all that stuff. Once it got, you know, kind of past, technology got past a point where that was not something that you would.
But most of the people I support today are people making full records. I mean, you know, you can they're a piece of work. You know, you want to listen to an album all the way through and stuff. You don't want to just pick the one song and stuff. But
well, I think they're supposed to be, at least in my opinion, correct me if I'm wrong.
I can't correct your opinion.
But, you know, an album is supposed to be a snapshot in time of where the artist is, wherever that is.
Nope, that is not your opinion.
Damn it!
You're wrong.
I'm wrong.
My opinion
is wrong.
Your opinion is that the opposite of that.
Yeah.
I was so close. I'm sorry, Mom. I failed again.
That's a grammar joke.
So where did we record last night on Cherokee?
Well, we recorded it not too far from where we shot the album cover down in South City at Sawhorse Studios. That's where we recorded. Miles Van Devere engineered it, did a great job. We did it, what was it, like 3 days? Well, you did one day. Because we're mean and we just make the drummer do it in two or three.
I did it in 5 minutes. He did the rest of it.
Yeah, and then I did another day for guitars, and then I actually did the vocals. I'd actually did in my home studio
because
I'm, you know, I like to light incense and you know, put on.
But to back it up, Sawhorse Studios, St. Louis, go there.
Yeah, that's it's probably my favorite studio in St. Louis. And it's not one of those that, you know, advertises a whole lot. It's just, you know, just this cool kind of like, oh, this studio is here. But like, once you walk in the door, it's like, oh, I get it. The vibe is just so, and especially with what we were trying to go with on this album, it was the perfect place to record it.
Yeah, it is nice. I mean, I like those stories hearing about the studios because we do have a lot of great studios in St. Louis. So it's, I mean, but yeah, you got to find what's right for you and what works. And like, but I think you were kind of, you said something about the sun earlier, and I just imagine like a place like that, like, and hopefully Sawhorse will get there someday or something.
Oh,
you know, but like,
they certainly deserve it.
Sun is like, I feel like there's so much history, obviously, in that room, but it's like, I feel like you were saying how the kind of the mood of Sawhorse, like when you walk in, you just kind of, so you feel like something different about particular studios, and like when you, I mean, does that affect you guys at all? Like, I mean,
oh yeah, I mean, it, totally. Yeah. Would you agree? I mean, when you get into that room, when you get in any room, it's different.
Sure.
I mean, you can just take the difference between like Sun Studios and Sawhorse Studios. I mean, they both kind of have, they're different vibes, but they're kind of, you know, more the kind of the laid back. You know, there's other, I don't want to mention specific names, but there's other more like super modern studios.
Right.
And you just get in there and you just kind of, it's not as relaxed. It's like, I must make music now.
Sure.
You know, where like it's our horse is kind of like, you know what, we're going to relax and play.
I get to relax after because my tracks get done real fast. So I'm not usually warmed up.
Yeah,
and it's not because I'm good. I'm not bragging. They just don't let me do more than one or one and a half takes. So I get to get, I ingest the vibe of the studio after I'm done. And
see, he's a perfectionist, and he's full of it. He sounds great on this album.
Yeah.
And that's not just being facetious. He does.
But he could have sounded better. Not Doug could have really sounded better if he'd been allowed to do more takes.
Not Brian says that Not Doug sounds great.
That just makes sense.
So anyway, But yeah, I mean that added a lot to it. But I think the thing that really gave this album the sound that it got or has not got is that we actually farmed out the mix to a guy named David Z. Zito hooked us up with him, and then if you're familiar with David Z at all, very famous producer. You might know one of his first albums.
Don't say it because I misquoted that earlier. It didn't happen. I was wrong. He was the guitar player in Lips Inc. who did the famous song Funky Town and was later instrumental in, according to stories, apparently, it's mysterious, the he early Prince research. Sound. His brother Bobby Z was the drummer in the Revolution, Prince Revolution.
Okay.
So
his younger brother. But he did co-write and produce Kiss.
Yes.
Not the band, the song by Prince. And also produced Fine Young Cannibal, She Drives Me Crazy. He's full of that Minneapolis party sound. Not Fine Young Cannibals was from Minneapolis. Was not from Minneapolis, but
anyway,
that was his stuff.
Yeah, he's got a definite like kind of thing that he does with the mix, and we just kind of let him
makes it sound awesome.
Yeah, made him just kind of sent him the tracks and let him go at it, and kind of went back and forth a little bit on some things. But pretty much just kind of let him do whatever he does, and then started to get tracks back, and we're like, oh, okay, that's what a record's supposed to sound like.
Yeah. Which is turn up the snare, evidently.
Yeah, turn up the snare.
What he does is turn the snare up.
The snare sounds great. He did.
That's not an insult.
No, it was good. It was good snare. Yeah. And the kick drum sounds, I mean, his drums sound good. I mean, the playing, it's all right.
But
the sound of the drums is really good. No, he did.
I agree.
He did a great job. I don't think it. I mean,
how do they sound now?
Terrible.
That's right. See?
Had we done it ourselves, it wouldn't be the same record, probably.
Yeah. Well, so let's we can throw some tunes on this. We did play some live acoustic.
Yeah.
We played the title track last night on Cherokee.
Take it slow, but
take it slow.
But it does contain the line. Right. I wanted to be tricky.
Sure.
I wanted to make people have to.
You have actually fooled people.
I have fooled people oddly. It's part of my evil side.
Take it slow.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that people have no idea what song title they're listening to and can't possibly find it online.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep them guessing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Last time on Cherokee, saw things in the ocean.
particular stories or anything around that track at all?
I mean, that track, especially like where the lyrics kind of come from, is so when we played with Zito, we said
all the stories will filter back to
us. It will.
But that was the muse for this project.
Sure.
Going back to that.
Yeah, thinking about those, you know, those days and the sound that we kind of had back then. But we all lived together in a house in South City, and there was a lot of stuff. Probably, you know, I mean, we could fill up, you know, another hour or two of the podcast, which I'm sure five people would find really interesting. But, you know, there was a lot of stuff, and, you know, we didn't live too far from Cherokee. So that song, the title of the album that's in there, is kind of, it's not specifically one night mm-hmm. on Cherokee. It's a lot of different nights in South City and just those days that are kind of put into the lyrics of that.
Yeah, it's just imagery of a bunch of debauchery.
I feel like, I mean, I've been recording a lot of these, and a lot of them happen to be recorded in South City. And I mean, there's just something about that part of town, and it sounds like it's been that way for quite a while. I've just recently started, you know, maybe a year or two, been hanging around mm-hmm. that way, Cherokee and stuff. And man, just there's like so many great bands that hang out down there. There's so many talented people coming out of that area town and like just making their own stamp of music right now. And there are a lot of them are writing songs about St. Louis.
Yeah. There's a vibe. If you go down to South City, there's just a vibe down there.
Sure.
Sometimes it's not necessarily pretty.
See, yeah, I don't think it ended up. We didn't get lucky with this. It was meant to elicit sort of a dirtier, darker kind of feel from
right.
It, I don't know necessarily seedy, but a little bit, you know, just a little bit off. And that's
something's
the way we felt.
Not quite
it
right.
Seemed like when we lived down there, we used Cherokee a lot as sort of a punchline for things we did. Like, well, I was on Cherokee, and that was
yeah. And then say no more, say no more.
So that was just based on our recollection. Not that we haven't been down to South St. Louis sure. for all these years, but that's just when we went down to shoot the album cover, we couldn't find somewhere on Cherokee that wasn't anything but so pleasant. It was so nice.
Yeah.
It's different from the memories we had of sure. like we were just thinking of like, yeah, that's where we passed out or whatever.
Cherokee and Grand, that's where the, you know,
it's where all the trouble is.
Yeah, shit's get real down there, man.
It's like, know. Oh, what a lovely shop.
Yeah.
Take a picture in front of this.
We go down there years later, and it's like, you know, this is a really nice area. I'd really like to live down here. Sure. This is okay.
What street were we thinking of when they wrote all these songs?
Last night on Cherokee, we went to a really nice boutique. It was pleasant, and we had some nice drinks. It was very lovely. Yeah. It was kind of like Cherokee was kind of one of those streets back then that, you know, you kind of like maybe the way people thought and still kind of think about like Sauget or something like that, you know,
sure.
like the people that if you just mention it's like, ooh, don't go down there. That's seedy.
Right.
That's a seedy area. So that was kind of like, you know, when we were living down there, it was like, oh, we went to down to Cherokee.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit where the, you know, the title comes from. It's just,
sure.
again.
Yeah. My dad still thinks like that. Like, I told him I took that job working at Oyster Bar and he's like, you know, telling me not to do that, and that you know, that of course anybody that goes works downtown is going to get stabbed or whatever.
I heard that statistic. I think everybody that goes downtown right. in St. Louis gets
everybody.
Stabbed.
Yeah.
I've never been scared for one second in this town.
Yeah.
I don't know what the big deal is. But
I mean, you know, I'm not naive. I know things happen, but it's
yeah,
like
but
you,
that's everywhere.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. You can get mugged in St. Peter's.
Sure. Yeah.
You know.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. So it.
You might be able to. Just try mugging me in St. Peter's.
Yeah.
I'd like to see it.
I put out that mug me in St. Peter's vibe.
Right.
So.
This is the T-shirt you're wearing that says "Please mug me, St. Peter's." Gives the wrong impression. Dressed like that, what do you think is going to happen?
Yeah.
Well, you get mugged in St. Peter's. That's
it's
what
literally
happens.
An invitation to be mugged.
All right, that's it. I got to hit the mall and get a different T-shirt.
But we'll so we got that live acoustic we did today.
Yes.
And then you want to play some tracks from the record?
Yeah, definitely.
Give people a taste of
if you wanna,
the sound.
Want to play maybe your favorite track, Bottom of the Sea?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that. For sure. That'd be cool.
You can talk about it and nobody can. Let them actually hear it.
Yeah.
That'd be cool. I like that song.
Yeah, I'll play that.
I totally wanted to do another take.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
Of that. Just for the record.
Just for the record about the record?
Yeah.
All right, so everybody, when you're listening, just remember that the drums could have had another
track. I rushed through some other tracks because I wanted another crack at that one. And then I finished the other tracks. I was like, all right, now we're going to go and do that song again.
It was our dirty plan because me and the engineer. Hi, Miles, if you're listening.
Thanks, Miles.
You know,
for going out to dinner with your family instead of letting me do another take.
We were like, that take was awesome. He doesn't need to do another take.
Yeah.
If I'd known, I would not have rushed through the last two. Anyway,
yeah.
Bottom of the Sea, coming around.
Enjoy.
Yeah. So we can grab a copy, oddslanemusic.com?
Yeah, oddslanemusic.com, or we actually... are releasing the album on Bongo Boy Records too. Can't not mention them.
Yeah.
So they you can go to bongoboyrecords.com and find us there, and all the links and everything are through them too. So
yeah.
iTunes, it's on both sites, but either one. But those guys have been really great in helping us get this out and promoting it and getting it on radio already.
Even they really have.
They
this
yeah.
sounds weird coming from someone in the band, but I'm just shocked. The last couple days, I open up whatever social media, and I'm like, "Oh, that's thank you, Bongo Boy."
Yeah, no, they're a little label out of New Jersey, and we fell into them on the last album. We did a video with Beetle Bob. I'm sure you're familiar,
sure.
And we did all this, you know, kind of put this whole video together, and we're like, "Well, what are we going to do with this?" And I kind of found these guys because they do like a TV show. And got it in with them, and then when we were putting out this album, we were like, "Well, you know what? Didn't that TV show? They had a label too." And I was kind of we were putting it around to a few different labels, and they ended up just loving it, and they have been like super supportive. And like I said, every time I open up my phone, it's like new Bongo Boy something or other, and I'm like, "Oh man, these guys are okay."
Nice. You know? Yeah.
So it's not a huge label, but I think. A big thing about finding like the right people to work with,
mm-hmm.
like you know, you can be on a Atlantic, but if you're number 775 on the list of people to do stuff for, well,
right.
What help is that? I mean, you get to tell people you're on Atlantic, but they're not doing anything for you. You know, these guys, you know, are treating us like number one, so
yeah.
I can't complain about them at all. That's really
sure.
it's been
good. Still a label.
Atlantic?
Yeah, I thought there was just Sony.
Oh,
is there anything else?
I don't know. I don't follow all that stuff. But Sony, Capital, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we talked about you also have the official music video out that, and what I read that you directed it and stuff too?
Yeah, yeah. We basically did it all ourselves.
Yeah.
So
DIY, huh?
Yeah.
Absolutely, Doug. Yeah. Doug did all the editing.
You mean not Brian?
Not Brian did all the editing.
I did.
And he put it together. He was the mastermind behind the theme. The brilliant theme, you'll notice, it's really a concept video of guys playing in a studio.
Right.
It's never, kinda, never
takes
been
a little
done
explanation.
Before.
Never been done before.
Never been done.
Yeah. But so. I like that, you know, it's kind of like ties in with like the same corner from the... From the album cover and stuff, like, and you know, it's just like
yeah. Well, the idea was that, and if we do a second video, it might make more sense. But the idea was that some crazy stuff happened on Cherokee.
Yeah.
We're on the corner, and of course, we're a band. So what do you do after a crazy night on Cherokee?
Yeah.
Well, you get up, you go to the studio,
right,
and record a song about it, right?
So, so you guys are like kind of Tarantino. This something you're going to next record is going to, or the next video is going to.
It'll go backwards,
yeah.
Yeah.
Right,
it'll
be the party that led up to the
exactly yeah. The backstory.
There you go.
So.
Actually, more of like Tarantino, the next video is going to be eight people sitting in a room talking for
go.
Three
now
and a half
talking.
Hours until I go to the bathroom and miss half the movie.
Jeez, how long were you in that bathroom?
An hour and 42 minutes by my story.
You
want to
get technical. You got to get that checked out, man.
All right, yeah, grab a copy of this record.
On that note,
yeah. Odds Lane Music. You can follow them online on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And stick around for Bottom of the Sea. Thank you so much, guys.
Thanks, Shane.
Thank you, man.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Well, yeah, that was it.